Isn't Muriel great? Did you see how she covered my little transition from being a wannabe bass player to being the one who has the privilege of sharing God's truth with us this morning? Well, my hunch is that most of us here this morning all struggle at one time or another with the issue of worry. I don't know if you've ever heard this or not, but someone has called worry the common cold of the emotions. I thought that was kind of cute, the common cold of the emotions. Number one, and so on. Well, here's what happened. Of the 25, 20 of the respondents indicated that worry was the number one issue that they struggled with. And interestingly, the other five people had worry listed very high on their list of priorities. So I kind of feel like the little simple survey confirms the fact that worry is a common problem for all of us. The scriptures are instructive for us about the issue of worry. I want to just share something that I found very interesting. The word worry in the original text that Jesus used in Matthew chapter 6 is really formed by combining two ideas or two concepts together. First of all, it brings into focus the idea of to divide. And then the second element is the mind. So worry is to divide the mind. Isn't that interesting? In other words, when we worry, we pull our mind in two different directions at the same time. It's a distraction. It incites us to focus on the what ifs of life. We end up using today's energy trying to solve tomorrow's problems. Interestingly, it's what Jesus recognized in Martha in Luke chapter 10 and verse 40. There we read these words, but Martha was distracted. Interesting, right? Martha was distracted by many things. As I thought about it, that seems a pretty good definition of worry, being distracted by many things. I want to take a moment to look at Jesus on the subject of worry, particularly in the Sermon on the Mount, chapter 6. And by the way, this is from the passage that Susan read for us earlier in our service. Look at verse 25. Remember, this is Jesus speaking, and he says, "Therefore I tell you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat or drink, or about your body, what you will wear." Now, I think the reason that Jesus talked to us about these issues is because he knew we would struggle with these basic issues like food and drink and clothing. Jesus gives us a second warning, or warns us a second time, in Matthew chapter 6 and verse 34. He says, "Therefore, do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will worry about itself. Each day has enough trouble of its own." I came across this quote that I wanted to share with you. It's by a guy by the name of William Ing. He says, "Worry is interest paid on trouble before it comes due." Interest paid on trouble before it comes due. Just throw in here one little comment from the Apostle Paul on worry. It's from Philippians chapter 4 and verse 6. Very simple, very straightforward, and a command. Do not worry about anything. Doesn't that sound like vintage Apostle Paul? I want to remind you here, any time in Scripture that we come across a command, it's God reminding us that he's dealing with something that isn't intuitive for us, or something that we can't handle ourselves, and so he invites us to rely upon him and seek his empowerment for doing whatever it is that he's asking us to do. I think most of you are aware that worry is a first cousin of fear. And those of you who were here last Sunday, you know that the fear was the topic of my message last Sunday. I mentioned that fear is an emotion that prepares our bodies to respond to danger, either real or imagined. I talked about the fight or flight response that is activated by adrenaline in our systems. Well, worry is really similar. It's a reaction to possible or potential threats. But the problem is, as I mentioned last Sunday as well, our bodies can't tell the difference whether this is a real threat or a potential threat. As a result, worry can be dangerous to our health. A physician by the name of Dr. Roy Grinker made this statement. He called it anxiety. That's an aspect of worry or fear. Anxiety places more stress on the heart than any other stimulus, including physical exercise and fatigue. That was a very interesting statement to me, that anxiety or worry could actually do that. I thought it might be helpful to think about the degrees of worry. On the lower end, we have what we might call common worry. These are the cares and the responsibilities of life. For example, you're a parent, you have kids in school, and one of them is late getting home. Immediately, you begin to worry. You begin to imagine things that could have happened to your child, and that's common worry. Another area would be things like the economy or your finances. When your finances get tight, it's a very common thing to get pulled apart, to get stretched, to get diverted into worrying about how everything is going to work itself out. So that's common worry. Now, in the middle here, we have what we would call crisis worry. And this is the kind of worry that we manifest when we respond to a crisis. For example, you'll lose your job. I remember back when I was pastoring in the Oshawa area, so many of the people in the church worked at General Motors. And as General Motors went through all of its crises, more and more of our people were concerned about losing their jobs. And it was easy to see this kind of crisis worry invade their thinking. Another form of crisis worry would be when a major illness erupts in your life, whether for yourself or for someone that you love and care about. Okay, so we've got common sort of at the bottom, crisis in the middle, and then the top level is what we call chronic worry. Unfortunately, this is kind of a learned response, and it can actually become what we might call an anxiety disorder. It's when the thought pattern of worry becomes a habitual pattern in a person's life. I've thought of it this way. It's kind of like the grooves on an old vinyl record. Now, if you're young enough, you don't know what a vinyl record is, talk to Stan. He's our audiophile. He'll tell you all about that. But the old records had these grooves, and then the tone arm had a needle that would drop into the groove, and that needle just followed around the groove. And that's what chronic worry is like. And the difficulty is that when we experience that kind of worry, our bodies go on alert, they produce adrenaline, and that adrenaline becomes excessive. All right, so hopefully that's a bit helpful. Now, I want to spend the rest of our time this morning exploring how we can win over worry. Winning over worry is what I want us to look at right now. And I'm going to suggest three simple actions other than the one we saw on the little screen there. And of course, trusting in Jesus is at the base of everything that we do. But here are the three. The first action is to name it. Name it. And the key question on this first step is, what am I worried about? It helps us to identify clearly What are the issues? What are the circumstances? What are the facts that are causing us to worry? We need to examine our thoughts. We need to clarify and identify the problem that is causing us to worry. This is essential if we're going to overcome and win over our worry. The importance of identifying the issue was revealed in a story that I came across. A guy came home from work to his ground floor apartment, heard some noise upstairs, checked it out, and found that his upstairs neighbor was trying to move a refrigerator all by himself. And the refrigerator was stuck in the guy's door, and he was in his apartment. So the guy from downstairs said, "Hey, I'm going to help you." And so they struggled, and they struggled, and they struggled. And finally, the upstairs neighbor said, "Hey, it's no use. No matter what we do, we'll never get it out." And the helper said, "Get it out? I thought you were trying to get it in." Well, you can see the peril of not clearly identifying what the issue is in that funny little story. So name it is the first step in the process of winning over worry. I think it helps to write things down, to clearly identify what the issues are. Here's something else that's helpful. We need to differentiate between worry and concern. And I know you're going to say, "Well, Pastor Vic, what's the difference between worry and concern?" I asked myself this question and I looked it up on the internet. No, I'm kidding. No, I'm telling the truth. Anyway, the person who I was reading said worry is problem-focused and concern is solution-focused. Isn't that good? Worry focuses on the problem and bogs you down in the problem, whereas concern enables you to look beyond and identify solutions for whatever it is that you're wrestling with. By the way, this first step, naming it, can diffuse a lot of our minor worries just by simply taking this first step. Here's the second action step, and I'm calling it frame it. First step, name it. Second step, frame it. And the key question here is, how can I do this, or how can I deal with this? And the practical application of this is to make a plan to take to write down some practical solutions, and it's helpful here to seek counsel and to seek advice from those you trust. So name it, frame it, and here's the third action step, tame it. Tame it. And the key question is, how can I do this? And here's where you need to make a plan and take action steps. And I love that old Nike slogan, just do it. Enormous energy is released when we take action. And this can be very, very helpful. So I hope you'll remember, name it, frame it, and tame it. Now, I want to drill into a verse of Scripture right now that will significantly help us in our attempts to tame our worries. And I'm going to ask you to read it with me. It's 1 Peter chapter 5 and verse 7. Can we read it together? "Cast all your care on him because he cares for you." Now, I'm going to ask you to read it again. And this time, would you read it like you believe that it's true? And read it in a good, strong voice. Here we go. "Cast all your care on him because he cares for you." Now, the word that Peter uses for care is the word for anxiety. The NIV actually uses that translation. Or worry. All right? The literal translation of the second part of this verse, "he cares for you," it's literally, "You matter to him." Isn't that a wonderful thought? You can cast your care upon him because you matter to him. Now, there are two key, let me try and say that again. There are two key truths that are embedded in this verse, 1 Peter 5 and 7. The first one is, He, meaning God, cares for you. God cares for you. Now, I want to say this, and I hope you'll hear me and hear my heart. Until we're convinced of God's goodness and His involvement in our lives, we really won't be able to trust Him very effectively. A number of Hebrew scholars and rabbis were asked this question: what is the most important verse in the Hebrew Scriptures for you personally? Can you understand what they're asking? Most important verse for you personally. Amazingly, there was a major consensus in their answer. I wish we had time for you to guess what the verse was. Unfortunately, we don't. But the verse that popped up most often was Isaiah chapter 43 and verse 2. Here's what it says. When you pass through the waters, I will be with you. That's the heart of the verse. I will be with you. And when you pass through the rivers, they will not sweep over you. When you walk through the fire, you will not be burned. The flames will not set you ablaze. I think the key truth, as I mentioned in this verse, is God's promise, I will be with you. Many of you have heard of Charles Haddon Spurgeon, C.H. Spurgeon, anyway. I think he really understood this truth, and he expressed it in this quote: God is too good to be unkind. He is too wise to be confused. If I cannot trace His hand, I can always trust His heart. Now, the idea of tracing His hand, if I can't trace His hand, means if I'm not really sure what He's doing or what He's up to, I can always be confident that I can trust in His heart of love and compassion. Well, I want us to look at the second truth from our key verse, 1 Peter 5, 7. In the second part, well, it's actually the first part, it's the second truth I'm identifying, you're asked to cast your care upon Him. Release your cares. Release your worries. Surrender your cares and worries. Transfer them over unto Him. I was fascinated to discover that the word cast that's used here is the very same word that's used in the Palm Sunday narrative in Luke chapter 19 and verse 35. It says they brought it to Jesus through, and that's the word cast, the very same word from the 1 Peter 5, 7 passage, cast their cloaks on the colt and put Jesus on it. Now, casting involves action. It's something we do. It involves transferring and surrendering our worries to Him. I thought it would be helpful if I kind of demonstrated this to you. So I went to Pastor Holly's closet, I guess she's downstairs, and I found this robe type thing. I'm not going to put it on, it's too hot, but can you imagine that I'm wearing it and I'm part of the crowd in the triumphal entry? When this donkey comes and Jesus is going to sit on it, what do? We pull off our robes and we cast them on the back of the donkey. And that's the very same word that Peter uses when he says we need to take off the robe of our worries and we need to cast them on Jesus. Isn't that a beautiful picture? It's so practical and it's such a significant step of action. I read about a single mom who raised six children all by herself, and then, believe it or not, adopted another six children and raised them as well. You're not surprised that she got a little bit of notoriety. And a reporter wanted to do an article on her, so he made an appointment, and he talked to her, and he said, "You've got to tell me, how in the world did you accomplish this incredible thing all by yourself?" And she said, "Oh, it's very simple. I wasn't all by myself." But she said, "I entered into a partnership with the Lord. I told him, 'Lord, I'll do the work if you'll do the worrying.'" And it seemed to work out pretty well for her. All right, in terms of life response, in terms of applying this in our day-to-day lives, I want to just recap the three steps to winning over worry. I want to remind you that the first step is to name it. Identify the issues that you are wrestling with, the issues that are threatening to divide your mind. The second step is to frame it. Begin to recognize solutions to the problems that you're wrestling with. And then the third and final step is to tame it by taking action steps that will resolve your issues of worry. And can I remind you again of our key verse here, 1 Peter 5, verse 7, "Cast all your care on him because he cares for you." The first thing that we need to do is to affirm the truth that God cares for you. Remember, you matter to him. And then we need to act, casting all our care upon him. Now this morning, I want to conclude the message by sharing with you the story of a gentleman by the name of James Cash. By the age of 21, James Cash had become an outstanding salesperson. Unfortunately, he had some health issues, and so he moved to the state of Wyoming, and when he arrived there, he got a job in a dry goods store. By the age of 27, James Cash had become the owner of that store, and 6 years later, he had purchased two more stores for a total of three. Now, I'm going to fast forward his story just a bit. By the year 1928, James Cash owned 1,000 stores. 1,000 stores. But you know what happened the next year, don't you? The great economic crash of 1929 came, and he lost absolutely everything. James Cash was 56 years old and $7 million in debt. That's a lot of money today, but it was a small fortune back in 1929. One night in 1931, James Cash, now penniless, admitted himself to a TB sanatorium. He wrote farewell notes to his family, and he lay down expecting to die. When morning came and he was still alive, he decided he better figure out why. When he stepped out into the hallway, he heard music and he followed it to the chapel there in the hospital. That morning, as he sat in the chapel, he heard a song for the very first time. And amazingly, God used the words of that song to restore his hope and to literally change his life. James Cash left the hospital that day and went home with a newfound faith and a renewed trust in God. At an age when most men are retiring, he started all over again. And today, his name is on stores in over 2,000 cities in the U.S. and Canada. In fact, his name has become a household word because, you see, James Cash are his first two names and his surname is Penny, J.C. Penny. Are you wondering what the song was that he heard that morning? Well, it's the song that we're going to end our service with this morning, or at least our song of response after the message. It's called "God Will Take Care of You." As we sing this song this morning, I hope that you will allow the biblical message of this song to remind you that God, pardon me, God really does care for you. I urge you to cast your care upon Him, to trust Him. If the song is unfamiliar, just listen to the words and let them sink into your heart this morning. Can I add this? If it will help you to surrender and cast your worries on Him this morning, I invite you to consider coming forward and just kneeling here or standing here at our prayer rail at the front. You know, that would be a great way to actually physically cast your care upon Him. And can I add one other thing? Maybe there's someone here and you have never had the privilege of opening your heart and life and inviting Jesus to come in, to be your forgiver and to be your loving leader. In our bulletin on the reverse side of the order of worship, you'll find a little prayer on the bottom, and you could use the words of that prayer. And you could bow here or stand where you'll be standing and pray that prayer and invite Jesus to come into your heart. Dear friends, He cares for you. And He invites you this morning to cast your cares upon Him. I'm going to ask the worship team to come, and we'll sing, and then we'll pray.